Go for the golden duplicate. Too many advertisers have the wrong, that is, unprofitable attitude about names that show up on more than one list. When these advertisers buy multiple lists, they run them through a merge-purge procedure to eliminate the duplicate. Don't let yourself make the same mistake. By all means, run a merge-purge, but instead of getting rid of them, cultivate your duplicate. Put them in a separate hot file. These customers are heavy hitters. They've shown that they purchased by mail again and again. Here's how to make maximum use of your duplicates. Mail to them now and mail again 1 month later. You can even mail the same package to them twice. Your response from these highly active buyers should far outdistance the rest of your purchase list. Take hotline names if they're available. These are names of people who have purchased within the past 3 to 6 months. The slightly higher cost of these recent buyers will be more than rewarded. These customers are more likely to be living at the same address. But more importantly, test after test has proven that people who have bought something by mail recently are more apt to buy again now. Use the size of previous orders as a yardstick. Here's another factor that tests have shown indicates a strong likelihood of ordering again. This can be attributed to the fact that customers who are willing to spend higher amounts through the mail have fewer fears of mail order. You won't have to waste time convincing them that mail order is a reliable method for purchasing quality products and services. Rely on a professional list broker. A good list broker can help you get more from your mailing, and their service is free to you. Broker's fees are paid by the list owner. Using your target customer file and other pertinent information such as geographical area, purchasing habits, income, and profession, a broker can guide you to lists you didn't even know existed, or customize an existing list for stronger response. Using a professional broker's services can bring you more money through the mail. Your customers, the key to your success. The reason you bought this course is because you want to learn more about how to increase the effectiveness of your advertising, to get more new customers, keep selling to your steady customers, and build a successful business. The best advice I can give you is to think customer. Your customers, who they are, what they need, and when they need it, are the key to building a vital, growing business. This should seem obvious, but it isn't. Just look at the majority of ads in any magazine or newspaper. How many ads actually focus on what the customer will get? Very few, I'm afraid. Don't let yourself repeat this mistake. Use the information in this chapter to create a powerful customer-driven advertising program. Focus on the needs of your customers. Describe the benefits they'll get in no uncertain terms. Make them a tantalizing offer. Do these things, and your bank account will reflect the result of your efforts. Chapter 4, Product Development, the secret to making a fortune by developing the ideal product. If you've ever tried to launch a new product, or if you're thinking about developing a new product, you probably recognize what a major challenge this can truly be. Quite simply, the vast majority of new products fall flat on their face. They fail to capture the attention of the marketplace. They fail to generate enough interest to move them off store shelves, and they fail to earn back even a fraction of their development costs. Most people who have tried will tell you it's nearly impossible to successfully bring a new product to market. But they're wrong. Dead wrong. To understand the true reason why almost every new product fails, what you really need to realize is where the ideas for these products came from. We've all heard stories about people who have been driving down the street when suddenly they were struck by a brilliant idea and they built the idea from scratch on a shoestring budget and parlayed it into a tremendous fortune. This might happen occasionally, but the truth is, this type of success is extremely rare. Most new product ideas, especially the type that's likely to fit into your current operation, are born within your business. Either you or someone on your staff gets a new idea that sounds like a real winner. Then you talk about it some more with your friends and other employees. You might even run it by some other expert in your industry for a final verification of your new product's viability. After that, it's hit the market and hit it hard. And make sure that no one breathes a word about it so you can corner the market. Unfortunately, this wonderful dream usually turns out to be completely wrong as the product dies a quick death, sucking down all the time, effort, and money you invested in it. Okay, now you know where almost 99% of all ideas for new products come from and what results you can usually expect. Remember, they come from within your company. But knowing that only solves one half of the problem. The other half, the half that's critical to your success, is where do successful ideas for new products come from? Well, hang in there, because I'm going to show you precisely where you can find as many ideas as you could possibly need for a viable, tremendously successful new product. I'll also give you a 6-step plan for developing a new product that will either make you tons of money or cut your losses to the absolute bare minimum. It's a formula you can safely use over and over again until you strike pay dirt. So if you're ready, let's get right to it. How to develop an ideal, super profitable product. I've already told you where a lot of dismal new product ideas come from, but I'm sure what you really want to know is where the ideas for ideal products come from. So I'm going to ask you this question. Where do you think the ideas for the most obscenely profitable and highly successful products come from? Do you think they come from new technology? Do they come from an innovative, revolutionary new idea? Do they come from identifying some new, undiscovered opportunity? Not really. Although all of these and many other factors may play important roles in the development of the ideal product, there is really only one key factor that in the end determines the success of any new product. That factor is your customer's need for the product. That leads us to Serling's rule for developing successful, highly profitable new products. All enormously successful new product ideas must be derived from your customer. I'll put it to you as straight as I possibly can. No idea, regardless of how wonderful or innovative it may be, can be successful if your market has no need for it. But a product that fulfills the true needs and desires of your customers is bound to be a major winner. A 6-step plan for developing an ideal product and taking it to market. As I mentioned earlier, there are 6 simple steps for developing an ideal product that will either make you a lot of money or cut your losses to the bare minimum. These steps cover everything you need to do to come up with a solid product idea, test that idea, and succeed in the marketplace with it. First, I'm going to list all 6 steps so you'll have a strong overview of what really gets the job done. Then I'll elaborate on each step, giving you the details necessary to ensure your success. Here are the 6 steps for developing and cashing in on the ideal product. 1. Find out precisely what your market wants and needs. 2. Calculate the downside risk of developing a product that satisfies your customers' wants and needs. 3. Calculate the upside payoff of developing a product that satisfies your customers' wants and needs. 4. If the payoff is large enough, test your market as prudently as possible. 5. If your first test proves out, test again, no more than 5 times larger than your first test. 6. If your second test proves out, roll out your product to your entire market. These are the 6 steps that are absolutely essential to your success in developing and marketing a new product. Skip any one of them and the whole thing becomes a crapshoot. Now, let's take a look at the ins and outs of each step. Step 1. Find out precisely what your market wants and needs. Please remember that all enormously successful new product ideas must be derived from your customers. In order to do this, you're going to need to do a little research. Not high-cost, multi-page studies that sound like they were written by robots. Not costly focus groups. Not double-blind surveys. Just a little old-fashioned shirt-sleeve research. The way you do this is pick up your phone and call 10 or 15 of your best customers, or best prospects if you're a startup business. Ask them what kinds of products or services that you specialize in would be particularly helpful to them. When a pattern emerges, you're onto something hot. Here's another exceptional way to use your research to uncover as yet undiscovered pockets of profit. Ask your customers how they use your product that's different from the way it was intended to be used. Maybe you manufacture a glass cleaning compound that an engineering firm has discovered is perfect for diluting powdered graphite for thorough application to its equipment. Bingo! You have an entirely new, highly lucrative product line. At this point, I know what you might be thinking. You might think that you've been in business so long and know your market so well, you can skip the research stage. But you're wrong. Here's a true story that makes this point really hit home. A few years back, a pet food manufacturer decided to develop a perfectly balanced gourmet cat food that would be more beneficial for cats than anything else on the market. In fact, the ingredients would be so top rate, no other cat food would even come close. Of course, he figured that he'd need to keep this under tight wraps so none of his competitors would find out about his plans and beat him to market. He hired the finest food scientists, nutrition experts, veterinarians, and technicians to develop his formula. He hired the finest graphic artist to design his packaging and a major advertising agency to mount an all-out assault on the market. When his product was complete, he tested it on hundreds of cat owners. Everyone loved his new cat food. Veterinarians lined up to endorse his product. Finally, the big day came. After a major marketing campaign that saturated his target market, his product went on sale, and it sold out in record time. Yes, it seems like he did everything right, and he had the results to prove it. But things aren't always what they seem to be. After the first month, sales of his revolutionary new cat food dropped to next to nothing. Within 6 months, the company went belly up. What was wrong? How could he have possibly failed? Before he went out of business, he conducted a final survey. This survey revealed to him what the crucial mistake was he had made. His fatal error was, cats hated his food. That's right. Cats couldn't stand this stuff. They wouldn't eat it. They ran from it. And nobody bothered to do the simple research necessary to discover this flaw until it was much too late. So even though the product seemed to be an overnight success, there were no subsequent sales and the bottom dropped out of the market. Here's my extreme caution to you. Whatever you do, do not skip the research stage regardless of how well you might think you know your market. If you do, you're risking your entire investment. I have one more caution for you. If you employ an outside sales force, be very wary of the suggestions your salespeople make for new products or for improving old products. Salespeople have a lot of idle time on their hands. They spend hours on the road or in coffee shops between sales calls. During this downtime, they often come up with ideas they think will be real winners. Now, since salespeople are persuasive by nature, it doesn't take much for them to convince you of the merit of their new product idea. But again, I caution you. Regardless of how strong a case your salesperson builds for a new product idea, test the idea on your customers first. The people who actually shell out their hard-earned dollars for your product are the only truly accurate yardstick you'll ever have for judging a new product idea. Step 2. Calculate the downside risk of developing a product that satisfies your customers' wants and needs. Once you've discovered a great new product idea by talking to your customers, you have to put your pencil to the paper. You need to calculate all of the costs involved in bringing your product to market. Don't cut corners here. Anything you underestimate will eat into your profits when you actually start to sell your product. The factors you need to consider are production costs, marketing costs, warehousing costs, maintenance costs, support effort costs, overhead, sales commissions, distributors' commissions, wholesalers' commissions. You might also need to figure in costs for factors I've overlooked. You know your business better than anyone. You need to rigorously account for every penny of expense associated with taking your new product idea to the marketplace. Step 3. Calculate the upside payoff of developing a product that satisfies your customers' wants and needs. The next step is to determine how much profit is potentially available from this new product idea. To do this, you need to arrive at the best price for your product and estimate as accurately as possible how much of your product you're likely to sell. I can't go into an elaborate discussion here on how to determine the best price for your product. It really depends on a number of factors. First, there's how you plan to position your product: bargain price, mid-range, top of the line, and so on. Then, you must consider how rare the product is. The fewer similar products available, the more you can charge. Also, it's often important to consider what your competition charges for similar products. In any case, you probably know your market well enough to determine the optimum price. Don't forget, though, you can always do the same kind of shirt-sleeve research with your customer to see what they'd really be willing to pay for your new product. Once you've arrived at the optimum price for your product, and you've accurately projected your sales, you multiply the two to arrive at your gross sales figure. Now comes the next landmark in your discovery process. By subtracting your expenses from step 2 from gross profits you've just calculated, you arrive at your net profits before taxes. Obviously, your profits must be worthwhile enough to keep pursuing the new idea. But before you drop a potentially good idea, there are a couple of things to consider. If your initial profits are low, or even if there's a loss, is this a reusable product that will pay off in a big way in the future? Or can this product be used to establish a relationship with your customers and profit by selling them other products you offer in the future? If your research and paperwork reveals that it's in your best interest to continue this process, then you move on to the next step. If it reveals that the profit possibilities aren't substantial enough, you've just prevented the loss of a considerable sum of money by not taking this product to market. Step 4. If the payoff is large enough, test your market as prudently as possible. This is the place in the process where many companies go wrong. They come up with a good idea, the figures look great on paper, and they commit to full tilt production. Before they know it, their brainchild is sucking up every spare dollar they have and more. Don't let this happen to you. Test your market with as small and as inexpensive a test as you possibly can. Here's an example of a prudent product test I conducted a number of years ago. About a year after my son was born, I began to notice that my wife bought every type of a certain kind of novelty product available. So I decided to conduct a little shirt sleeve research. I began to talk to all of our friends who had young children to see if a pattern emerged. Sure enough, almost every mother we knew was buying as many of these items as they could get their hands on. Fathers bought some too, but the heaviest buyers were always the mothers. My next step was to research even further. I did this by going to a local mall that had a store specializing in items for infants and toddlers. Again, my hunch was verified. The items I had in mind were strong sellers, primarily to women. So I proceeded on to the next step. I calculated the cost, projected my sales, and determined what I could reasonably expect in terms of profit. It still looked good, so I moved on to step 4. At step four, I determined that the easiest way to test was to develop a prototype and try to sell it to store owners. Creating my prototype took about a week and cost me about $45. I took that prototype and did two things with it. First, I showed it to as many new mothers as I could. Their reaction was quite enthusiastic, and they agreed that my price was fair. Second, I took one full day and made sales calls to owners of the types of stores I thought would be interested in my product. This revealed some surprising results. I had initially targeted four types of businesses and ranked them as to how I thought they would perform. I was right about my first choice, but my second choice bombed completely. My third choice turned out to be a powerful performer, and my fourth choice performed well enough to keep it in the mix. This just proves what I consider to be one of the most important rules of powerful marketing. The market will always tell you what it wants and needs. I don't care how well you know your business, your product, and your customers. Even the most informed projection is still a guess, and if you go on your instincts instead of the truth of the market, you're liable to get burned. My overall results turned out to be that 40% of the stores I visited ordered my product based only on the prototype. Not only was this a tremendous response that exceeded my expectations, but I had also uncovered a powerful new market. My third choice that turned out to be such a strong performer represented a huge market, much larger than my first choice. I was able to get an appointment with a buyer from a large national chain who told me they would order tens of thousands of pieces if the finished product met certain conditions. This is a perfect example of the way simple, inexpensive, prudent testing can be extremely beneficial. By the way, I never took my product to market. After weighing all the positives and negatives, I decided I didn't want to be in that business full time. But the reason I haven't told you what the product is that I still might market it myself or license the rights to someone else to market it sometime in the future. Let's look at some other ways to conduct a prudent, inexpensive test. My rule of thumb for effective testing is spend as little as possible to get the results you need. Here are a number of tips to help you achieve that goal. If you're running a space ad for your test, run as small an ad as possible and run it only once. The magazines or newspapers you run in will try to sell you a larger ad, a second color, or a special rate if you run three times. Forget about all that. Pay a slightly higher rate to test your small ad once in basic black and white. If it works, you can always upgrade. If it fails, you've saved yourself some money. If you need to actually produce the product to test it, produce as few as possible. Even if you pay an exorbitant rate for a small batch, your goal is to determine whether the product will sell, not to make money on your test. Whenever possible, go with a good mock-up or prototype as opposed to producing the complete product. I always tell publishers to try to sell a new book idea as a report first, because most printers won't accept an order for less than 2,000 books. If you're using direct mail to conduct your test, mail as few pieces as possible. For many items, tests of 100 to 500 pieces are more than adequate at this stage. Also, mail your first test with first-class postage. You want your results as quickly as possible. Third class, if you mail enough pieces to qualify, will slow your results by at least 2 or 3 weeks. Here's one last story about the benefits of testing and how to keep your costs down. I recently tested a new marketing program I developed. I used direct mail and sent 700 pieces to a list made up of marketing managers and business owners. The piece was expensive to mail, close to $2 per piece in the mail. To cut my costs, I took on a partner. She invested 50% and did all the labor. In return, she was to receive 40% of all profits. If the program was successful, she stood to make a substantial sum of money. Well, the test failed. I had actually expected to make a few thousand on the test alone, but didn't. However, the test revealed that everyone who ordered was the owner of a business. My partner decided to drop out, but I'm going to continue. Obviously, I'll forget about marketing managers and concentrate on business owners in my next test. Step 5. If your first test proves out, test again, no more than 5 times larger than your first test. Okay, you've done your research, calculated all your figures, tested your market, and gotten satisfactory results. You're ready to go, right? Wrong. You're ready for another test. Sure, you're in good shape, but you're still not ready to run full force with your new product. Here's why. Your first test was simply a test of your product's viability. It did not constitute a complete enough test of your market. It's possible that your first test could have given you a false result. Now, I'll admit that this probably isn't likely, and chances are strongly in your favor that you have a winner. But 5 times larger is an old rule culled from direct marketing that will never lead you astray. I can't tell you how many times I've seen companies jump immediately from a test of a single small ad to a full-page ad, often for multiple runs in more than one publication, and fall flat on their faces with their big rollout. Don't cheat here. Be patient and carry out this crucial step. If it defers your wealth, it will only be for a short time. If it saves you a fortune, it's money you'll be able to put to better use on some other project. Step 6. If your second test proves out, roll out your product to your entire market. If you've made it this far, you're in an exceptional position. You've successfully developed an ideal new product that could make you a fortune. Now, and only now, is the time to commit major resources to your new product. Get your marketing campaign in order. Crank up production. Arrange for financing. Finalize your distribution and all the other things necessary in your line of business. In short, get that hot item to market. However, I do have one caveat for you. Even when rolling out on a major scale, I advise that you do it with caution. Pay attention to your results and see if any patterns emerge. Sometimes certain geographical areas will vastly outperform others, or maybe you'll notice that one gender or a specific age group buys your product heavily. Perhaps certain seasons or economic conditions make for favorable sales patterns. I advise you to roll out in segments rather than go with your entire market in one bold stroke. Often the results you'll get will show you how to modify your market plan to cut your costs and realize even greater profits. Conclusion. You're now well on your way toward developing and cashing in on an ideal product. I hope you found this step of the journey worthwhile. But more importantly, I hope you'll continue on with the journey. Too many times, I've seen companies commit tremendous resources to a project based on a hunch. And nearly all of the time, they wind up disappointed and lose substantial sums of money. Now, don't get me wrong. I have absolutely nothing against hunches. Some remarkable products and substantial fortunes have been generated out of hunches. All I'm saying is that you must test your hunch as prudently as possible against the reality of the marketplace.